what I do, I deliberately breathe a little deeper. I deliberately try to hear my heart beating. I deliberately try to calm myself down. I deliberately look for the black in the other person's eye to make eye contact of my eye with that person. And I will very softly move closer to the person.
In this season of high emotions over political issues and sometimes just rancorous conversations, we're going to offer some advice on how to deal with the debate.
A, I will never tell a lie. I will just never do that. I'm not going to compromise my integrity for you for telling a lie. But B, I have no need to answer every question put to me. I have no need to do that.
Some very good advice, and there's a lot more to come in a conversation we have scheduled a bit later in today's broadcast. Hey, have you ever felt like a martyr? I mean, really?
I think what the martyrs really offer us are examples about what it means to follow Christ. And what we see very clearly in the martyrs is people who have heard that message of take up your cross and follow me, and really truly follow that to its logical conclusion. This isn't just a question of love your neighbor as yourself in some kind of vague, ambiguous sense. This is every day to try and replicate that kind of moral example in our lives. And that's what the martyrs show us, that it's possible, that it can be done, that ordinary people can be called to extraordinary things.
Well, if you're anything like me, you may feel just a bit more ordinary than a lot of other people, but that's fortunately not the way the Lord sees us, and we're going to hear about that and the interesting subject of martyrdom in just a moment. Welcome to another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network, OCN. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and we have a whole team of people in the office who are helping to put all that we do together just so we can reach out and offer you help in as many ways as possible. Go to our website and check us out at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. I'll talk a bit more about what you'll find when you go there in a few minutes. But first, here's our startup conversation with our host, of course, Father Chris.
I think many of our listeners are familiar with at least a few stories of the martyred saints. But how much have we really reflected on the details of their stories? Professor Candida Moss from Notre Dame is here to talk with us about the theme of abandoning families in the stories of the early martyrs. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Some of our listeners may be a little shocked right now because to say that a martyr abandoned their family sounds a little harsh to a modern ear, I think. But what exactly are we talking about here?
Yes, I think you're right. I think it does sound very harsh to say that martyrs abandoned their family, but it's a very common theme in stories of early Christian martyrs. We find lots of early Christian martyrs, particularly young women, who leave their fiancés or their often very young children to follow Christ and become martyrs. And I think that that sounds shocking to modern ears, but in the ancient world, this is actually very common.
Mm-hmm. And the idea of faith being more important than even a biological tie here, which we're speaking about, actually comes directly from Christ, doesn't it?
Yes. Even in the Gospels, Jesus makes some comments that sound very harsh and difficult. He actually says in the Gospel of Matthew that whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. So we have lots of places, even in the New Testament itself, where Jesus says things that clearly prioritize the Christian's relationship with God and with Christ over their relationship with their family members.
Now, someone who's thinking about this from the outside, who may not have the same foundation we're saying, would say that Christ is a selfish God.
A selfish God. Well, I think it's selfish from the perspective of the modern family. Nowadays, when we think about what it means to be part of a family, we're really thinking about a very small unit often, mm-hmm. particularly in Western societies, we're talking about parents and their children.
Right.
And even while in some families, you're also talking about grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins and a much larger support network, it's actually quite a small unit. But what Christ is offering people, even in the Gospels, is that they get to participate participate in this bigger family, this Christian family. So it's not just that you leave your parents and your children and your spouse behind. You actually join this new family. And sometimes in modern Christian communities, language of being brothers and sisters in Christ sounds sort of banal. We use it so often to refer to our fellow Christians. But it's clear that in the writings of Paul and in the Gospels, they mean this very seriously. You get to participate in this new family of Christ, and that they will support you. I think that we can understand this in the ancient world in terms of a very new religious movement that's just taking off. So if you think about someone converting to Christianity in the first decades after the death of Jesus, not many people were Christians. And if you went home and you told your spouse or you told your parents that you were joining this rather strange new religious movement that no one had heard of, it's likely that they would have told you that you absolutely are not joining this cult, and you will stay home and you'll marry that nice guy from that good Roman family that they picked out for you. So lots of these passages are really about explaining to Christians that no, they have to follow their divine calling, they have to follow their heart, and if that means leaving their biological families behind, then so be it. This is the much more important vocation that they have to fulfill.
You know, I can't help but think of many cases in Scripture, some of which you've said, where people make choices about their family that seem to go against or against the grain of human nature directly because of their faith. I'm thinking of Abraham with his son Isaac. Of course, we have God the Father who gives up his son as an ultimate sacrifice. And Christ leaving his mother behind in this world, who had no other biological children to care for her. How do these scriptural examples fit into this discussion, do you think?
Right. Well, I actually think that these examples, while they're all about family, are reassuring and sort of different from one another. So perhaps I can take them in turn. I think the example of Christ leaving his mother behind in the world fits into this discussion very well. We have Christ on the cross saying to his mother, look, here is my disciple, and he's your son now. So you have her being given this new family. So it's not as if he abandons her altogether. He's leaving her with a community that will support her, that he is describing as being her family. And I think we have to take that language very seriously. Mm-hmm. It's really a very recent innovation that you can actually prove that someone's biologically related to you. Beforehand, you have to take that on trust. And so I think we have to really trust that Christ means it when he gives his mother to the disciple John. In the case of God the Father giving up his son as the ultimate sacrifice, I think this has to be the preeminent example. There are so many points in time when people will ask, why is it that God would let this happen to me, this, you know, dreadful thing of losing relatives or human suffering or individual lament? And we do have this one example of God the Father giving up his own son to suffering and death for other people. Mm-hmm. So the idea that this is always a negative is completely undercut by that one preeminent example. In the example of Abraham and Isaac, we have something different. It's so painful to hear Abraham and Sarah waited for so long to have this one child, and everything hangs on Isaac in that story. Isaac is the one through whom they will have descendants, through whom they will have descendants as numerous as the stars. Isaac is really the bearer of the promise that God made with Abraham. And the idea that Abraham has to sacrifice him is just, it's morally repugnant to us today and is shocking even for an ancient reader. But the point of the story is to demonstrate that Abraham does have fear of God. It's not so much about obedience as it is about proving to God that Abraham does fear him. Fear being sort of the ancient Old Testament way of articulating the relationship between humanity and God. It's not sort of fear as in a modern sense. It's more sort of this kind of respectful, not so much loving, but trusting relationship that you would have with God. So we do have these examples where people are expected to pick sort of the Christian community and God and the course of salvation over the responsibilities and the love that they have for their individual family members. But this, in a world in which there is a God, in which you take that relationship seriously, that's to be expected. You should pick God above your family members. That should just be instinctive.
Mm-hmm. I know when I look at the books that we read, I've been a clergyman now for more than three decades, mm-hmm. and I've read constantly remembering the saints at the various services that we do. Mm-hmm. And clearly there are millions of martyrs. And mm-hmm. it often amazes me how little people know about mm-hmm. the history of the church, and especially about the history of these blessed people. This past summer, we were in Jerusalem, and we went to the Church of St. Stephen. We went to the spot where he was martyred mm-hmm. as the first protodeacon, of our faith. And that's a very, very special thing. And I think martyrs have a lot to say to today's world. Mm-hmm. The early martyrs, I mean, we have records of them, their lives, their teachings. They aren't written because we just enjoy reading about torture. They're mm-hmm. there because we're supposed to learn something from them. That mm-hmm. family is important to us, isn't it?
Yeah. I think what the martyrs really offer us are examples about what it means to follow Christ, truly, like a truly embodied hermeneutic of what it means to follow Christ. This is imitatio Christi. This is the imitation of Christ. And what we see very clearly in the martyrs is people who have heard that message of take up your cross and follow me, and really truly follow that to its logical conclusions. Now, hopefully in the modern world, we're not going to encounter that ourselves. We're not going to be called to martyrdom necessarily, mm-hmm. but we are called to replicate the ethics and moral code of the New Testament in our day-to-day lives. We aren't, this isn't just a question of, love your neighbor as yourself in some kind of vague, ambiguous sense. This is every day to try and replicate that kind of moral example in our lives. And that's what the martyrs show us, that it's possible, that it can be done, that ordinary people can be called to extraordinary things. And when you read the stories of the martyrs, you often hear them commended for displaying specific Christian virtues like courage and obedience, but more than anything else, love. They are often described as loving Christ and loving one another. And when you read the stories, you see them as these incredibly empathetic, forgiving characters who embody really what it is to imitate Christ in their lives. And I think that's what makes them so powerful. It's difficult to imagine replicating the conduct of God incarnate. He's so different from us. But replicating the behavior of other Christians who have just risen above what it means to be a human being and really managed to sort of conquer their own fears and weaknesses and follow Christ even to death, that's tremendously inspirational.
Certainly it is. Candida, it was a pleasure to have you on our program today. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Candida Moss on this edition of Come Receive the Light. And if you'd like to hear that conversation again, go to our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. If you've just joined us, you're listening to a broadcast production of the Orthodox Christian Network, Come Receive the Light. We're a weekly program heard on this station, or perhaps you're listening to us on the internet. Encourage your friends to come to our website and to listen to the program. The website, again, is myocn.net.
We have to find a common ground to draw people closer to Jesus Christ by attraction. They have to see our lives and see our worship and contrast it with their own, and then let the Lord lead them. And I think that's the way we stand up for our Orthodox truth.
And now with our feature interview for this week, here again is our host, Father Chris.
How can we firmly but lovingly stand up for Christ in conversations about abortion, homosexuality, and religion? Longtime friend of the show, Dr. Albert Rossi, is here to give us advice on how we can voice the unpopular. Great to speak with you again.
Oh, it's good to be here, Father Chris. Really good.
These are topics that my mama used to tell me stay away from on the air, but we have to touch them, Dr. Rossi, because there are a lot of people out there who want us to answer something on this.
Mm-hmm.
The morning prayer of Filaret of Moscow includes the line, "Help me to act firmly and wisely without embittering or embarrassing others." This is one of the biggest challenges of Christianity, isn't it?
Yes.
To stand up for what's right in a way that those who disagree with you are moved to possibly even reconsider the stand, rather than shaming them or insulting them and backing them into a corner.
Yes, yes, and more yes. You know, we're aware that as we pass through our days, the Lord Jesus Christ sends humans in front of us for his reasons, and he wants us to bring each of them closer to him in however that interaction goes. So, yeah, and it takes, you know, for starters, I would just say that it takes enormous humility to know that and know the power that we have of him moving through us, and he wants to use us to voice the truth of the Orthodox faith as best we can. Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot, of course, now during these the political times, we see a lot of posturing, one side posturing the other side, and these hot-button issues, it seems people really aren't interested in actual conversation where ideas are exchanged. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I see it. And both sides know what they think of. Instead of listening to the other person, they're just formulating what their response is going to be. Is that productive at all, do you think?
No. And this is really important for us who have the goal of trying to bring other persons to Jesus Christ. Dialectic and debate at that level distances people. It doesn't bring them closer to us or to him. Yeah, we have to speak very firmly and very convincingly with our humility. Mm-hmm.
It's also, I think, a problem that we face in society itself, where everything is supposed to be in a quick soundbite. So you answer a question, and therefore there is no discussion, because in that one sentence you're supposed to cover everything about that issue. I mean, no human being can do that and know the heart of the other person.
No.
There's just no way to do it.
No, there's no way to do it. There is no way to do it. There's no way to do it. And that's why authentic dialogue of two of us just sitting over a cup of coffee and talking about what something is really important, that doesn't happen too much these days.
No.
For that very reason, Father Chris, that we have a different TV mindset, a different cultural mindset of these sound bites, these bits, boom, 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 and go on. And if I can't get that answer in 4 or 14 seconds, it's not worth anything.
Well, the text message and the email has, you know, replaced the phone call, the walk in the park that you used to take. Well, we'll send you a package, or we'll send you some kind of an email, or a you know, an attachment that you will read. So that personal relational issue or that relational encounter is just no longer there.
That's exactly right. It's no longer there. Or if it's there, it's there so minimally.
Minimally, right.
But we construct it. That's our job. Our job is to try, in however short or long a period I have with this other human being, to try to get some connection, some fusion, some contact, some eye contact, some reality going on between us. And sometimes, oftentimes, that can be done by breaking down some of these defensive barriers and adding a little humor.
A little humor, like, too, sure. What are some of the techniques we can bring to conversation to back things down a little bit to a calm tone? That is especially important now where everyone is wants to be either a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, and you have all this craziness going on where people don't sit down and talk.
We don't sit down and talk. And there's so many of these code words that we use that people put us into these little boxes. But your question about techniques is really important, because I, too, find myself often in these situations. But what I need to do is know that I need to have some personal, interpersonal discipline. And when the other person's getting hot, what I do, I deliberately breathe a little deeper. I deliberately try to hear my heart beating. I deliberately try to calm myself down. I deliberately look for the black in the other person's eye to make eye contact of my eye with that person. And I will very softly move closer to the person. I'll sort of like invade
their space a little bit.
That's right. So there's a certain kind of message here that I'm not playing on your playing field. You can get as hot and as judgmental as you choose, but I'm going to keep my little body and soul as much as I can calm and try to talk to you with my own little techniques. And I find myself, you know, often having to do that because, boom, people know how to push my buttons very quickly as well. And it's hard just to calm down. And it's hard to take that little pause in my own self without clicking right back.
Right. Well, the natural reaction is the hip reaction come back at
yeah.
you. Is there a time, do you think, to end the conversation about issues? I mean, on the one hand, we want to stand up for our beliefs. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it could be a waste of breath to even talk to someone who isn't listening to it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I have no problem at all saying, you know, gee, thank you, I have a commitment, and very nicely moving away, because it's clear to me that that person has an agenda that I don't want to plug into. I don't want to talk at that level right now. Now, I might be able to talk to that person at a different time, mm-hmm. but right now, this is a waste, and I have no problem ending conversations like that. And I also have no problem not answering every question posed to me. And I heard this from a Metropolitan recently that really helped me, because it's kind of what I do, but he said it clearly, because it was asked of him, gee, you're in such an important position. People are asking you all kinds of questions. How do you deal with it? He said, I'll tell you my own personal little rule that I try to live by. A, I will never tell a lie. I will just never do that. I'm not going to compromise my integrity for you for telling a lie. But B, I have no need to answer every question put to me. I have no need to do that. So that's very important for me to know.
Those are very important statements.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
So you can ask any question you want. But I have gotten real good at being able to sidestep questions and say something that's truthful, a truthful sentence, without answering the question that was directed to me and keeping the conversation going.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a couple questions, and hopefully you won't sidestep them. Let me see what we can do here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get your advice on talking about four specific issues.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
What can we, as Orthodox Christians, say about this? Because we hear that term used so much now,
mm-hmm.
More so than ever before. Mm-hmm. I remember all my years in high school and in college. It was never such an on-the-table mm-hmm. issue as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
What can we, as Orthodox Christians, say about this?
Again, it depends who we're talking to.
Correct.
And usually, often, people want to box us in. For example, I was talking to a relative, a very close relative a while ago, we were in a car, and there was a young person in the back seat, and this person said to me, how come you're against homosexuals?
Hmm.
Well, what kind of question is that?
Yeah, right.
Like, so, frankly, I didn't, and I'm saying this because I didn't answer very well. I could have used it as a nice way to talk, you know, well, why are you asking me the question? What do you think? And so on. Instead of establishing a little conversation, which I could have, and dismissed, what I said was, well, I'm all for freedom, but my freedom is such that I believe we human beings are so free, we are free not only to choose what person we're going to have sex with, we're so free, we're free to have no sex if we choose. I raised the flag on the flagpole that
wow.
high.
Wow.
Any other person just got muted.
There's nothing to say.
That
There's
was
no
the end
retort.
Of the conversation, which, you know.
There's no retort to that.
No. And the person in the back seat said, you know, yay, you won again. Well, I wasn't interested in winning mm-hmm. and losing, so it depends on. But in terms, someone is really serious and says, you know, I'd really like to know your position on homosexuality, which, you know, happens to me a lot. In short, here's what I say. That I believe that persons of the same sex orientation have been marginalized and really have been maltreated by the culture and by the church more often than not. And we have to separate the person from the behavior. Then where the conversation almost always goes is, okay, what's your position on marriage for homosexual, which, of course, is a big issue among states and voting and all that. And I just say that from my perspective, I consider the word marriage to be a churchly word, a sacrament, and therefore not a legal term. Mm. So that trying to bring marriage into the legal arena is kind of having it both ways. And if that's what's done, and someone asks me, how would you vote if you had to vote for it against it, I'm not in favor of it. I would say that much. And then talk some more, if the person wants to talk in a back-and-forth kind of way. But what I would be looking for is a common ground, something mm-hmm. that we can have in common and talk about, because we're interested in pastorally bringing human beings closer to Christ, and same-sex attraction, you know, heterosexual attraction. We're all human beings, and we're all looking for love and peace and joy. So all of that, I use all of those words because I refuse to allow people or for me to draw a little line in the sand and say, here's the truth, and if you don't like it, then you go away, and when you finally are ready to talk my language, come back and we'll talk. No, that doesn't work.
Okay, I agree with you there. Let's do another one. Let's look at abortion. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with that? Because that's an issue today.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it depends on the scene, whether it's a mailman or a fellow, you know, prophet or St. Vladimir's or whomever. I'm very careful to say that I want people to know where I stand, but I do it obliquely. You know, mm-hmm. I'll say something like, "Gee, a couple of years ago, I took my two children and we marched in the pro-life march in Washington D.C." That says an encyclopedia to the person I'm talking to, mm-hmm. because the person now knows that I, you know, do not believe in and will not vote for and not support abortion in any way. But I would also say many of the some persons I know who are against abortion are so fundamentalist and so violent in their position that one wonders, you know, whether they're speaking the way they do, does the Lord much good or does the truth much good? So, and the other side of that is, you know, those persons, both men and women, because men are involved in some way or another, who have had abortions, post-abortion, how much pastoral need they care they need, because I taught in a secular university for 24 years and met a number of human beings who would come to me after an abortion. So it's a very delicate issue, but in terms of the way we're talking, you know, conversation and theory, I would want people to know where I stand. I'm against abortion, you know, and that's the kind of law that I would want enacted in my land. That's what I would say. But again, I'd be looking for common ground. They did a very interesting study, I think it was in Boston a number of years ago, where they took a couple of the leaders of the pro-choice and a couple of the leaders of the pro-life movement and got them aside and asked if they could meet privately with no press and no one knowing it, meet once a month and talk about the issues behind closed doors. And they did, and they met for a year, and they discovered that 95% of the issues, they were of the same mind and wanted the same and had the same values and actually were able to discuss the issues as human beings. Once we polarize the issue, the chances of changing other people get minimized.
How true. Finally, religion itself has become a hot-button issue right now, especially in any place where Christianity and Islam come into contact. So how can we be those proud witnesses for Christ without, as Filaret of Moscow said, embittering and embarrassing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what a great question. And again, we come back to our expectations. And thinking about this program, what I need to do is have others know what I think is the truth, and I need to listen to them for what they know to be the truth from their subjective position. So basically, it's a come and see attitude. Come, you know, do you want to? Would you come with me sometime to my church, to a Vespers or Divine Liturgy? And I would be willing to go to your synagogue or to your mosque with you. That is to say, that's an authentic exchange. I want you to know what I believe, and I'm willing to listen to you. One, like, there's an attitude in here that I don't think is at all helpful. If I see myself as having the position to, quote, stand up for the church, that in and of itself puts me interiorly in a defensive position, and I can sound pretty, militaristic and superior, when that's not going to do anybody any good. Because in truth, we come back to Isaiah 55, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, my thoughts than your thoughts. We have to find a common ground to draw people closer to Jesus Christ by attraction. They have to see our lives and see our worship and contrast it with their own, and then let the Lord lead them. And I think that's the way we stand up for our orthodox truth.
Well, Ellie, it's always wonderful to talk with you. Listeners, to hear more from Dr. Rossi, please visit our website and do a search for his name. It will bring up a whole series of enlightening talks. Thank you, Dr. Rossi.
Thank you, Father Chris. I always enjoy it. Have a good day.
And that website, of course, is myocn.net. You're listening to Come Receive the Light, one of the many ministries under the umbrella of the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the founder of this ministry, also the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology. I mentioned earlier the Sounding blog on our website. One of the more recent contributions to that blog, January 22nd, I believe, is entitled Understanding and Living Our Faith, a nice follow-up to what we just heard from Dr. Rossi. We'll be back next week. We'd love to get your feedback. Share with us the fact that you listened to this broadcast. And if you'd like to become a financial partner, you can do that simply by clicking on the donate button on the website. Again, that's myocn.net. Until we meet again, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.